You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel. I'm sitting in for Maggie, guest hosting this hour and next hour as well. As always, we here at Civic Media are delighted and honored that you've chosen to spend some of your Thursday afternoon in discussion, in conversation, in communication with us about some of the major news items, stories of the day. I thank Maggie for giving me this opportunity to have that discussion with you. And I want to tell you also that I am joined here in the studios of Civic Media, here in Racine's own Radio Park, by my outstanding producer, Jacob. And together, we are soliciting, we are encouraging your comments, your questions, your inquiries. Be a part of our discussion this afternoon. That phone number is 855-752-4842. Once more, that's 855-752-4842. Jacob always reminds me dutifully that you can also be a part of our conversation by dropping a comment, a question into the chat box. And we will not only acknowledge that, but thank you for that and respond to that as well. So be a part of this discussion this Thursday, September 4th, 2025, here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Let me tell you a little bit about what we're going to be doing both in this hour and then also next hour. Let me tell you that we have got some fantastic guests coming up to speak with us about two very different but somewhat related issues, not just in terms of the future of our nation, but also the future of our state, the future of our communities as well. In the second portion of this first hour here on the Maggie Dawn Show, we're going to be hearing from the mayor of Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. His name is Dennis McBride, and Dennis is coming on not only to talk with us about a new book that he is publishing in the very near future about the challenges of the year 2020 as a municipal leader here in the state of Wisconsin in these United States of America. But he's also going to talk, of course, about the other challenges of being a mayor in America in this time, including most recently those catastrophic floods that affected virtually everyone in southeastern Wisconsin, including but not limited to residents of his city, Wauwatosa. We are looking forward to having Dennis McBride, Mayor Dennis McBride, with us from the city of Wauwatosa in this, our second hour, our second portion of our first hour here on the Maggie Dawn Show. The second hour, we have another fine, outstanding guest. Her name is Kristen Hansen. She is the executive director of Blue Sky Waukesha. Not at all surprising, invited her on the show because of the work that she, like Dennis, does in the area of education and civics in particular. Blue Sky Waukesha, one of those good organizations, nonpartisan, nonpolitical, that is addressing the present challenges in America by presenting to us academics and intellect and thoughts about the ways in which our government should work, encouraging civics and good citizenship across the board. Kristen Hansen joins us in the last two segments of our second hour here on the Maggie Dawn Show. A lot coming up, some great guests, some great conversation. Be a part of that. Be a part of our discussion about those issues and more. We are going to begin, however, Jacob and I are, this first hour by talking about education. Yes, indeed, education back in the news in two major ways, yesterday and today. One of them coming out of a place called Harvard University, another one coming out of a place called Northwestern University. Two different stories, both of those universities, major institutions in the Midwest, in the East Coast, major institutions in the United States of America on the face of the planet, facing attacks by our president and by this administration, alleging that they have not been sufficiently supportive of efforts to curb anti-Semitic behaviors on their campuses. You know a lot about what's happened in the Harvard campus. We'll also talk about what happened just today, the announcement, the perhaps not completely surprising, but nonetheless stunning announcement that the president of Northwestern University will be resigning, based in part, if not exclusively, upon the pressure and the focus that he has gotten as the leader of that major institution. the cancellation of $790 million in grants, research grants to Northwestern by this administration, prompting in major part the resignation of the president. We'll talk about that in just a few moments. But we're going to begin with what was going on yesterday and continues today in connection with Harvard University. You've heard of Harvard. It is the first institution of higher learning in our nation. And we know that way back in April, it drew the attention of a fellow named Donald Trump. He's the president of the United States of America. And he looked around and described the nation's oldest university as a wellspring of bigotry. Those may not have been his words, but he described Harvard as this place where, again, the policies and practices of the university, according to him, were not sufficiently responsive to the anti-Semitic behaviors and conduct on that campus. On April 11th, this administration sent to the leadership of Harvard University a major letter. Recall this. Maggie talked about it on this show. I talked about it on a thing we have going on Saturday morning called Amicus, a Law Review. We all talked about it here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. We talked about this letter that the president authored through the Department of Education telling Harvard University that it needs to change. And that, in fact, if it doesn't change, its access to millions of dollars in federal research monies would be compromised unless Harvard acquiesces to some demands made upon it by this administration. What are those demands at the time, way back in April, continuing to this day? Those include audits, again, by the federal government of this institution, the establishment of what the president called a merit-based admissions hiring a policy, which again sounds reasonable, except in context of how he views merit-based admissions and hiring policies. He called for the shutdown of every single diversity and equity and inclusion program on campus. And he also called for an examination and audit of what he described as the programs and departments of Harvard that most fuel anti-Semitic harassment or reflect ideological capture, whatever that may particularly mean. In any event, Harvard decided not to simply acquiesce, as have other universities. You know about that. Harvard responded on April 14th, just a few days later, and announced that it would be forcing the president to do what he needs to do, because they're pushing back on the efforts to try to compel Harvard to comply with all of these things, to intrude, if you will, into the liberty and the academic freedom, the First Amendment rights of the institution as both a place of higher learning and also a place where students come to hear diverse views and diverse perspectives. The trade-off that the president proposed, that is continuing with research funding from the federal government, or if you fail to do what I say, all of that's going to be cut off. The lawyers for Harvard wrote in a court filing in June that began the lawsuit. They said, all told, the trade-off put to Harvard was clear. This, again, according to the Harvard attorneys, telling the president, telling the nation how they were responding to what was going on. Here's the ultimatum, according to Harvard. Allow the government to micromanage your viewpoints and your academic institutions, or jeopardize your ability to pursue medical breakthroughs, scientific discoveries, and innovative solutions. That's how the Harvard University lawyers, the administration, the leaders shot back and said, we're not going to take that, and file a lawsuit. And in June and July, this is litigated in front of a federal district court judge in the U.S. District Court in Boston, that's Massachusetts. Her name, Allison Burroughs, B-U-R-R-O-U-G-H-S. We have heard from her before. She has been one of those many federal judges out there providing some guardrails to this administration and things it wants to do. She has entered orders previously in connection with this case. She holds a hearing back in July, and ultimately she reviews all sorts of materials. She hears oral arguments from the parties in favor and in opposition to what the president is wanting to do. And indeed, just yesterday, on the middle of the day, the judge issues her order, And she basically tells the Trump administration that it cannot do this, that it has broken the law. It has violated the law by freezing these billions, not just millions, but billions of dollars in research funds in the name of stamping out anti-Semitism. Again, this case focusing principally on research funding, but also First Amendment rights and due process rights that the president sought to strip away from the university. The university has undeniably been continuing to negotiate with the White House in an attempt to try to resolve this without giving up its capacity to lead and to provide policy direction to its academics, its students, do those other things that a university, any university, should have the liberty and the freedom to do in America. And in the wake of that, in the midst of that, we have Judge Burroughs saying no can do. She said, we must fight against anti-Semitism. She acknowledges that. But we equally, she said, need to protect our rights, including our right to free speech. This is the judge speaking just yesterday in her order. It's an 84-page ruling. She spent a lot of time putting this together based upon the evidence presented to her. She said, we also need to protect our rights, including our right to free speech. And neither goal, she said, should nor needs to be sacrificed on the altar of the other. Let me repeat that. She says neither goal should be or need to be, needs to be sacrificed on the altar of the other. She writes this. She says Harvard is currently, even if belatedly, she says, maybe a little bit delayed, but nonetheless is taking steps it needs to take to combat anti-Semitism and seems willing to do even more if need be. And so in the midst of that, she says, Mr. President, administration cannot be withholding these funds as a way of compelling the university to do what you wanted to do. She adds this, now it is the job of the courts to similarly step up, to act to safeguard academic freedom and freedom of speech as required by the what? By the Constitution of the United States of America. And to ensure that important research is not improperly subjected to arbitrary and procedurally infirm grant terminations. That's a shot right across the bow of this administration. No arbitrary and procedurally infirm grant terminations, even if doing so risks the wrath of a government committed to its agenda, no matter what the cost. Let me repeat that. Even if doing so risks the wrath of a government committed to its agenda, no matter what the cost. Those are the words yesterday of Judge Alison Burroughs, U.S. District Court in Boston. When we come back, we'll tell you more about the consequences of that. We'll tell you about another aspect of this coming out of Northwestern University when the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in for Maggie this hour and next hour as well. We're beginning the broadcast this afternoon talking all about education, this major decision coming out of a federal district court, a trial court judge. Her name, once again, Alison Burroughs, U.S. District Court, Boston, that's Massachusetts, finding that the administration illegally canceled funding for Harvard University. No small thing, in dramatic words, telling the president you can't do this. It's a violation of the First Amendment, and you're acting arbitrarily and capriciously in doing just this. We know as well that today brings other news of academics in our national attention, too. We hear just this afternoon, the president of Northwestern University in Northern Illinois, his name is Michael Schill, S-C-H-I-L-L, has announced just today that he is going to resign. He ends a difficult tenure that also included attacks by this administration on him and prompted cuts in funding by the Trump administration to Northwestern University, forcing the university to lay off quite literally hundreds of employees. Again, like Harvard, Northwestern became the target, undeniably, the focus of the president's ire, if you will, after months of intense scrutiny. And Schill also appeared before the Congress last year and described his efforts as the leader of that university to address anti-Semitism, during some campus protests over the horrific Gaza war. All of that prompts in April the federal government, again the administration, freezing $790 million in federal research funds. Sounds familiar? Just like Harvard. They didn't plan for Northwestern, which again, located, as you know, just down the street from us in Evanston, Illinois. We know as well that in the wake of that, the president of Northwestern University has issued this statement. He said, "Our community has made significant progress while simultaneously facing extraordinary challenges." That's sort of a Blythe reference to, of course, the attacks on the university and the attempts to do there what the president has attempted to do in other institutions. And President Schill said this. He said, "Together we have made decisions that strengthen the institution and help safeguard its future. We know about this practice. We've seen this before. We recall well James Ryan. He is the now former president of the University of Virginia, also earlier succumbing to pressure from the Trump administration, resigning earlier this year, facing the same kind of thing. University warning that as a result of these cutbacks, the research attempts and the research initiatives and projects and programs of this major nationwide, worldwide university in jeopardy." That's how they describe the impact of the withdrawal of these funds, and has spent the last several months trying to cope with what it's going to do in the wake of all of that. And so we've got today here on the Maggie Dawn Show, not a mixed bag, but certainly some lessons coming out of the academic world this week, yesterday and today. We've got the resignation of another president of a major university attacked by this president for exactly the same kinds of things that the attacks are being pursued on with respect to other universities as well. Harvard pushing back, even while attempting to negotiate with this president to see if there is some middle ground that could result in some consensus here. The judge there, Alison Burroughs, saying that as long as these attacks continue, the president is violating the First Amendment and the First Amendment freedoms of that University of Harvard. Plainly has implications for universities beyond just Harvard, across the nation. Everyone looking at this opinion, even as it will almost certainly be appealed to the First Circuit Court of Appeals. Listen to the language once again of Alison Burroughs talking about the arbitrary and capricious nature of this, the violation of the law. You think that other leaders of universities and colleges around the nation are not looking at that and thinking, gosh, here is a jurist who is addressing the law after a hearing, after taking in evidence, not precipitously deciding this, but doing this based upon a measured view of the facts. This has impact, and this has meaning across the nation today. Yes, indeed, for academics, for the students especially who attend colleges and campuses and community colleges and two-year trade programs and all kinds of things across the country that are unmistakably under attack by this administration. We will continue, obviously, on the Maggie Dawn Show and other institutions here on Civic Media to address this. And we include, as always, our guests and our listeners. We're delighted this afternoon that David, calling in from San Francisco, that you're on the air with us. David, your comment or question here on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Oh, thanks. I wanted to raise, you remember how in the overall, the school districts of America are sort of starving and in horrible shape. Do you remember how the Texas, there's a school book commission that's been censoring the books for 40, 50 years, and they were the ones that took Thomas Jefferson out of the textbooks 10 years ago. They're the ones that refused to put evolution into the biology books. They're the ones that have refused to allow any discussion of pollution or different issues in the social or scientific world. I'm surprised that nobody has really come down hard on that Texas commission as causing the downfall of the American school stability. If you remember, if you've paid attention to that issue, Texas is such a huge state. It's got market. So many markets that it can control the publishers,
right,
and that the publishers have to make it through that Texas commission.
Yep.
And so the other 49 states have.
All right. And David, we appreciate very much your comment, your observation here on Maggie Dawn Show. And we appreciate the comments, questions of all of you calling in about these education issues. David reminding us about what's going on or has gone on in Texas and the importance of liberties and freedoms for academic institutions. David, thank you so much for being a part of our discussion. When we come back, the mayor of the city of Wauwatosa. When we come back, we'll talk with Dennis McBride right after this on The Maggie Dawn Show. This is The Maggie Dawn Show on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel. I'm sitting in for Maggie Dawn this afternoon. We have a very special guest with us this afternoon who's going to talk about civics, going to talk about government, going to talk about what it means to be a mayor in the early years of the 21st century. I want to indicate to you that, as I introduce him, that Dennis McBride is also a longtime professional colleague of mine. He's a personal friend of mine. Delighted to have Dennis McBride, the mayor of Wauwatosa, with us this afternoon. Let me tell you a little bit more about Mayor McBride and the ways in which we have had a past affiliation. Dennis is, yes, indeed, a proud graduate of Wauwatosa East High School, right, Dennis? A journalism degree from UWM, a master's degree in public administration from Princeton University, law degree from a place called New York University. He has served in a number of different legal capacities, including almost a quarter century as a senior trial attorney and supervisory trial attorney for the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. It was in that setting that I worked closely with Dennis and reveled in not only the challenges, but also the accomplishments that Dennis brought to that office, that leadership there. He has gone on to public service, not only in that environment, but also he is the 17th mayor of Wauwatosa. He's been elected to four terms in 2020 and 2024. Before that, terms as the president of the Wauwatosa Common Council and, of course, on the Common Council as well. Lots of different responsibilities there. I am delighted, Dennis, on behalf of all the folks here at Civic Media, to welcome you to our broadcast to talk about your work and also the fact you've got a publication coming up. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Dennis.
Well, thank you. I'm kind of overwhelmed by that nice greeting. But of course, I hope everyone knows what a legal star Jim was. And I heard about Jim before I knew Jim because his dad was on the UWM Alumni Association board with me and talked about him all the time, as he should have.
Our parents are very proud of us, are they not? Right?
Yes.
And so thanks so much for that, Dennis. We're going to talk about a major publication that Mayor McBride is going to chat with us about called A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. We're going to spend a lot of time talking with the mayor about that, about the year 2020 and the challenges of that. Before we get to that, Mayor, I want to chat with you also about the challenges of being a mayor. And let's begin with what I know was your tremendous leadership and direction at a time of crisis in Wauwatosa recently. And obviously, I'm talking about the floods, but chat with us about what that experience was like in leadership and responding to the needs of your constituents there in the great place called Wauwatosa.
Well, yes, we had a 1,000-year flood. Wauwatosa's had a couple of 100-year floods during my lifetime, but we hadn't had a 1,000-year flood. And the other communities were severely affected. Glendale, City of Milwaukee, West Allis was deeply affected. But we had, just on a city level alone, we expect to have $7 million of damage in our village, our historic village area. We're not a village, we're a city, but we call it the village. Hart Park was severely damaged. We had some damage to the county's oldest commercial building, which is what we call a Little Red Store, built in 1854. Yes. Down there. Businesses were affected, homes were affected along the mostly along Menominee River Parkway. So it was quite a blow to the community, shattering. What my role was to make sure that the staff had the support it needed. I tried to stay out of their way. We have tremendous professionals working for us at all levels. The first responders, the Department of Public Works. In City Hall, we had people, our deputy city administrator spearheaded a lot of that because the city administrator was out of town. our communications people were essential to that. So I was checking in with them all the time, but my main job was to provide support and stay out of the way of the professionals. It was the best thing I could do. I also took a call from a foundation in California that week, and they gave Wauwatosa $1 million to help repair the damage to Hart Park. And these were the Morgridges who grew up in Wauwatosa and went to Wauwatosa High School together. John and Tasha Morgridge. John was the CEO of Cisco Systems. And they have a foundation, a family foundation called the Tosa Foundation, even though they live in Northern California, because they love their hometown. And they've given lots of money to Wauwatosa in the past. UW-Madison, they've given hundreds of millions of dollars to. But out of the blue, they gave us $1 million. God bless them. It was quite a moment.
Right. And money in these circumstances means something, right? It doesn't solve everything, but it does mean something. And again, with your good leadership, Dennis, and the involvement that you have, I wonder if you would talk also, again, you talk very humbly about staying out of the way of the professionals. I suspect you're understating dramatically your own role in that. I know you are. Talk with us about the personal impact upon people there in Wauwatosa and their continuing struggles, the humanity of all this, which I know has always been a part of your focus. Again, many years that we were together when you were serving on the EOC, but also since that time in leadership there in Wauwatosa. Talk with us about the person, the individual impact of this and your reaction to that.
Well, again, our Department of Public Works has been heroic during this. I think to date they picked up at least 350 tons of debris, mostly along the Menominee River Parkway and all of it around the city. People had their basements flooded. We had a couple of homes that were probably damaged beyond repair. These are people's lives. Homes are more than homes. They're more than structures. They're people's lives. They lost precious photographs and records and things in basements. I talked to one woman who her father just died, and they thought everything was safe in the basement, all the records she needed, and they weren't. People are stunned. You know, it's stunning for all of us to see the videos and the drone footage and all the rest of it. But when your home is turned upside down and you are homeless, at least temporarily, it's something that it's hard to overcome. Our job as a city is to make sure that, well, first of all, our first responders literally rescued people out of their homes. We have a boat. We were rescuing people. People drove into water that they shouldn't have. Some people tried to kayak, and they needed to be rescued. So on every level, we needed to help people overcome those sorts of things. But the psychological trauma is something that we're all going to have to work on repairing over time, too. So our health department is terrific, and they've already contacted people, reached out to people. Governor Evers has come to Wauwatosa a couple of times. The State Department of Emergency Management has a 211 number. Hundreds of people have called that. It's a team effort. No one person can do everything here. It's been remarkable. And I've been contacted by neighbors and other residents who've said, what can I do?
Yes, right. Right.
And that's really the best thing of all.
Absolutely. That's the commitment. And I recall when I first saw images, they were of Wauwatosa. As you know, I live just to the west of you, but spent a lot of time, frankly, at your library, other places up and down North Avenue, up and down 76th Street there. And the dramatic in the village, of course, itself, those dramatic images that were seen worldwide. Right. And the implications of that huge.
It's remarkable how Wauwatosa has been on the international stage a number of times during my mayoral tenure. But I get contacted by news outlets literally around the world sometimes. And then I talk about that in the book as well.
Yes. And that is the terrific segue, Dennis, into just that. You are, among other things in your accomplished life, you are an author. You have authored a book called A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. want to begin to talk with you about that, focusing on the year 2020. You note it's a year of another time of great challenges, plural, pandemic, lockdowns, economic downturns, protests, police shootings, George Floyd responses, and many other issues related to violence in the streets and a bitter presidential election, counter-protests, public health issues, all kinds of things presented to you as the mayor. Talk with us first about, again, what prompted you to write this book. Again, A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. Why did you decide to put all this, and we'll tell you, we'll talk more about the content of it. Why did you decide to put pen to paper and talk about those issues in response in your leadership role?
Well, first of all, both of my parents were newspaper reporters. They're in the Press Club Hall of Fame. And they actually met in the Milwaukee Journal newsroom. So I'm a product of the Milwaukee Journal Company. And I was a journalism major. And it seemed to me that it was important to write the history of this year and in part how it affected my hometown. But the book is a lot, is about Wauwatosa and Milwaukee and Madison and Kenosha, but also about Seattle, Portland, Minneapolis, New York, and all the other places. So it's not just a local book, but I thought it was important, as I said, to preserve this history and to tell the inside story of how mayors respond to such things. In my last chapter is called The Second Hardest Job in Government. Michael Coleman, the former mayor of Columbus, Ohio, was quoted in 2021 as saying he thinks that the job of mayor is second only to the president of the United States in terms of its difficulty, because we are the elected officials closest to people. And so, again, we deal with not just the nuts and bolts of city government and municipal service, but also the emotions of our neighbors and our residents at times of crisis. So when I sent out book proposals, I thought, well, it's going to take me months to sell this thing if I'm lucky enough to sell it. Indiana University Press responded immediately. I mean, when I say immediately, I mean within 20 minutes. Because what I said was, and my first chapter is called Microcosm. Wauwatosa was a microcosm of America in 2020. We had 98 days and nights of racial protests. We had the impact of the pandemic. We had the impact of the pandemic-related economic downturn. We had a mass shooting at Mayfair Mall. And during that time, we saw protests and counter-protests over the pandemic and racial issues. But also, we were the city that put Joe Biden over the top in the state that put Joe Biden over the top. Half of Joe Biden's winning margin came from Wauwatosa. And so during this tumultuous year, we had this churning of politics behind it. And I thought, you know, this story needs to be told.
It certainly does. And Dennis, appreciate so much not only your committing this to paper, but talking with us about it, the animation for putting pen to paper. And when we come back, we're going to talk with you more, if you can stay with us, about some of the specifics of that. You've identified the many different crises and challenges of that year. When we come back right after this break, we're going to chat with you more about the content and the mission, the purpose of this book, and the things that people can take from it as they acquire it and read it. All that coming up with Dennis McBride, the mayor of Wauwatosa, here on the Maggie Dawn Show, right after this.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in for Maggie Dawn this afternoon. We are spending the second portion of this first hour of the broadcast here on Civic Media, talking to the mayor of the city of Wauwatosa, Mayor Dennis McBride. As I said before, Dennis and I go back a long period of time, former feds. Dennis doing a huge amount of important work in the EEOC, and since that time, of course, in leadership in the city of Wauwatosa. He has written a book called A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization, about the year 2020 and the experiences that he has had in that year, lessons pulled from his experiences of those times, including the pandemic and lockdowns and economic downturns, as Dennis said right before the break, violence in America and in Wauwatosa, and appropriately titled the book A City on the Edge. We're delighted to have continue our discussion with Dennis McBride, the mayor of Wauwatosa. Dennis, thanks for joining us once again this afternoon. All right, and I think we have Dennis on the line here, and we'll be all right. Dennis, are you with us here on your end of things here?
Yeah.
All right. Very, very good. So I wanted to follow up on your comments right before the break, chatting about, again, lessons you take away from this. Can you describe for our listeners some of the big themes that those, and everyone should obviously get a copy of your book, what are the kinds of things that they're going to be pulling from this in terms of lessons and perspectives that they should know about as you were the mayor and continue to be the mayor? Kinds of big ticket items and issues can they anticipate hearing all about from your book?
Well, first of all, I'm an amateur historian. I've written and discussed history in a variety of ways over time. I've given talks on different things. And it immediately struck me that what's old is new again. So the pandemic, for example, we had a pandemic in 1918 and 1919, the Spanish flu epidemic, a pandemic worldwide. And I went back and took a look at that and compared and contrasted our response 100 years ago with our response 5 years ago. And the similarities were striking. One of the reasons this book came out in 2025 and not in 2021 is that the editor at Indiana University said, you know what, we want a five-year look back. And I was itchy to get my book out, but he was right. It made it a better book because as time went on, I realized that all of the things that were going on in 2020 are continuing to reverberate in American politics and the economy and even our psyches today. Protests came back in a big way in 2024 with the campus protests regarding the Gaza hostilities. A number of things happened as a result of the changes in 2020. For example, Zoom became a thing. Here we are.
Right.
You know, I used to have to go to the studio for interviews, and now we're doing this. Younger people don't want to go to the office as much as we all did back in the day. We all used to wear suits, didn't we, Jim?
Yes, right.
business casual has overcome the world. And there are any number of things that have come out of it. But the fundamental problem, so I talk about the pandemic and the protests, but the polarization, too. I go into great detail about how we stopped behaving well as a country in 2020. We've had reckless driving persist across the country. We've had people mistreat each other, death threats to school board members, attacks on other elected officials, judges getting shot and killed, Nancy Pelosi's husband getting beaten in his house. These things have to stop. And I'm talking about how we need to get back to the fundamentals of our democracy. I close the book with that plea. But in the meantime, I also talk about, I try to help people understand what the role of protests are, and legally and morally, and how people are supposed to behave as interpreted by our Constitution and our Supreme Court. People wanted me to fire the police officer who caused a lot of the protests, led to the protests. They kept insisting that I fire Joseph Mensah, and I said, I don't have that authority. State law gives that authority to the Wauwatosa Police and Fire Commission. And one of my very good friends said, you're thinking too much like a lawyer. And I said, guilty as charged.
Yes, right. That's a good thing. Because, that's a good thing, right?
Well, as I quote Justice Frankfurter from a case from 1943, the history of liberty has largely been the history of the observance of procedural safeguards.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try to bring in, I like to read literature and all. In A Man for All Seasons, a great play and later an Academy Award-winning movie. It was about Thomas More, the patron saint of lawyers, politicians, and public servants. He was beheaded by King Henry VIII for opposing the Reformation. In one of the scenes, More's wife and son-in-law were demanding that More arrest somebody for being bad.
Mm-hmm.
And More said, I would let the man go if he was the devil himself until he broke the law.
There you go.
And his son-in-law said, well, I'd cut down every law in England to go after the devil. And More said, and when the last law was down and the devil turned around on you, where would you hide? The law is all being
right.
Flat.
Dennis, I'm wondering if you can stick with us for just a few minutes after the top of the hour. We're going to follow up on that story. We're going to talk to you more about your book right here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Stay with us, everybody. Dennis McBride, mayor of the city of Wauwatosa.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.